We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Good Minute Hummel podcast, and we got Robbie Hummel.
I'd known you since you were a kid.
I could blow my knee out, both knees, and still kick your ass.
We're trying to find the Robbie Hummel statue.
I wanted to kill you.
All right, welcome back, Goodman and Hummel podcast. I'm Jeff Goodman. He's Robbie Hummel. And, you know, thank goodness Robbie could fit us into his busy schedule this week. Last week, couldn't do it. He was so busy that he actually couldn't fit us in. I've been busy trying to find an extra large Robbie Hummel Purdue jersey. And I can't find one anywhere. And I want to make good on this bet, but I couldn't get one sent to me in time before I leave Charleston. So we've kind of revised the bet a little bit.
We have.
And I think it's actually benefiting you because I'm going to wear it at the Final Four for the better part of a day. Now, not all day. I'm not going to wear it to like media availability.
See, I think that's weak. I think a bet is a bet. And if it happens to be a media availability day, then that's your apparel. Jersey with no sleeves is the key, though.
No sleeves,
it doesn't count.
But I've tasked you with trying to find an extra large.
I don't have time.
I'll pay whatever it is. I've decided up to $100 I will pay.
Wow. I was gonna drop $1,000 on Arizona gear.
Yeah.
I was committed. I was gonna get like a Mike Bibby signed jersey. I was gonna get some game shorts.
But the marketplace does not merit that I have to spend more than $100 on a Robbie Hummel jersey. All right.
Way to cite economics for not spending some money. That's well done.
Anyway, so that's the revised bet. I might even wear it to the pump party.
Please do. I hope I see you at Intersport or the pump party and you've got a jersey. I don't even care what jersey it is. Just seeing you in a jersey with no sleeves on is going to be funny.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You better keep doing those bicep curls.
Yeah, I haven't done them in a few days.
You've lost that muscle mass from one day of doing it.
Took about a day. Another person who's lost some mojo lately, and we'll start here, is UCLA head coach Mick Cronin. And they have been atrocious this year. They're 6-9. Their best win is Oregon State. They just lost over the weekend to Cal. They're terrible. Cronin decided to go with this international route this year, which, frankly, I don't know how much we talked about it in the preseason, but baffled me because it just doesn't fit. Like, it was too many chances.
Well, and not there.
Right.
You think about who has gone to UCLA, and I understand that there's some, at least from what I've been told, there's NIL challenges there. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Which is shocking. That's shocking. I guess it's not because they were flying commercial up until
people don't care. People just don't care that much.
They just expect them to win, and it's kind of like, I want to go, but I don't want to. Whereas you look at, you know, other places, and the fan bases are so rabid that they're willing to help. But yeah, sorry, keep going.
So Cronin has been typical Mick Cronin, which, you know, I don't have a problem sometimes with him calling out his players and his fiery attitude. Like, I think in a way that's a good thing, right? Holding guys accountable. I'm not sure it works with a bunch of international guys and young guys, unproven players that are trying to adapt to being over here and the American game. Like, I think sometimes you got to know what you're dealing with and understand, like, you put this team together, you knew it was going to be a work in progress. You can't be Mick Cronin all the time and just go after it. These guys aren't Jaime Jaquez and Tiger Campbell. You can't publicly call them out if they're not playing well. It's just not fair. So he's done that plenty here over the last few weeks as they suck, and they have sucked. One of their six wins came against Chaminade. They beat nobody. He, after the loss the other day, he didn't come out for the post-game press conference. He sent Rob Palmer, his assistant, and Bill Plaschke of the LA Times destroyed him. Absolutely destroyed him in a column. And it was, I think it was kind of deserved in some ways, because here we've kissed Mick Cronin's ass for the last few years as he's done a really good job getting UCLA back on track, right? Got him first four to Final Four, and it didn't end there. They've been, you know, competitive, you know, in the top 25 for the most part, a fixture in the top 25 the last couple of years. He's done a really good job, and we've kissed his ass and said he's done a great job. Everybody has. Well, now you got to take the good with the bad. And here's the bad, and you got to face the music. And when asked about it, Rob Palmer said, well, Mick's still talking to his team. Well, he wasn't talking to his team, trust me. He was probably throwing chairs around that room.
You don't know that he was throwing chairs.
No, but I remember in Vegas last year, they lost two games. Okay?
Yeah, to Illinois and Virginia, right?
Yes, and after the second, which I think was Virginia.
They lost Illinois first, I believe.
Talia and I were standing outside the locker room, and I literally heard huge bangs and then a bunch of words that, again, Talia's never heard me say. And that's saying a lot. You know, like this dude is at the highest level of, I don't give a shit what people really think of me. I'm going to say what I want to say. I'm going to act the way I want to act. And I'm going to be old school. I'm going to be old school, and hopefully that'll work. So give me your overall take on this situation.
Well, my overall take is that I think people know that UCLA is not good. And losing to Cal, while, yeah, for UCLA probably always, that's a bad loss with the way that Cal's program has been. But it's so much of a bigger story to not go to the presser. If he had just gone and faced whatever music was coming, probably.
Why don't coaches just get, like, Matt Painter is really good about that. You know that. You're around him a ton. He's the model of, even if it's not his fault, what is Matt Painter going to say?
It's on me.
Correct.
I heard Tom Izzo say it's on him last night. Now, he was pretty sarcastic, it seemed like. But he did say that, you know, like, say, you know, it's on me. I didn't get the team ready to play. And on a Saturday night in LA, when I assume the Lakers are probably playing somewhere and the Clippers are probably playing somewhere, and it's not like this is UCLA with Tiger Campbell and Jaime Jaquez. So I can't imagine the media contingency is massive at this Cal UCLA battle. So if you just go, are in there for 5 minutes, take the blame, and then leave, you don't even have to believe it, but say that.
Yeah.
No one is talking about this at this point. You've lost to Oregon, Stanford, Cal, Maryland, Cal State, Northridge, Ohio State, and Villanova in like the eight of your last nine games. Yeah. So I just don't understand why he wouldn't understand that. You know, like, he's done this for a long time. And even if he doesn't want to go, you'd think that he would understand this is a non-story if I just go. But if I don't go, now all of a sudden I send my assistant coach, it's a massive story. So that's where I am so surprised. And, you know, the players have to play, but this always falls on the coaches. You recruited them. You're making.
I get you don't have NIL that can compete with maybe Arizona or some of those SEC schools or Illinois, Indiana. But you know what? I'm looking at like Butler's group.
Yeah,
and they did a pretty good job with second tier, maybe even
no doubt. Fat Mom has done a really good job with that team of getting some guys.
Like, you
should. Mick Cronin makes a ton of money. This does fall on the coach. I mean, the fan base is going to put this on the coach, regardless of how mad you are at your players. And I, you know, the international thing is interesting because I want to say I heard him talk about how there were some guys that felt a little bit homesick, and it was hard. And I think about the Americans that go over and play pro basketball in Europe. What are they all looking forward to? The end of the season. So they can go home. And until you get kind of acclimated, it's really hard, especially when you're in college. You know, these are young kids. So, yes, they're talented. You know, I think about UCLA and I think about them getting the best players in Southern California and the West Coast. Yes. I don't think about a bunch of European dudes, maybe one, you know, but it's a different approach. And clearly it has not worked this year. It has been a disaster, but he's got to go to the press conference. You went when you were at the Final Four.
That's right.
You went when you were winning all the Pac-12 titles.
Yep.
You have to go when it flips and your team's not good.
So here's the second question for you. Mick Cronin has a buyout of about somewhere in the vicinity of $16 million. He is a name that's been thrown out there for Louisville heavily. Yeah. Obviously, as a replacement, he was an assistant for Rick Pitino. He's a Midwest guy. It fits him. You know, there's some talk that maybe he thinks he can get out of that deal and the buyout wouldn't be 16. I just can't see Louisville paying $16 million.
Why do all these places think that they're like, why does Florida State think that their grant of rights is just not real? Why does any coach think, well, I can get out of my buyout? What's the point of the buyout then? Like,
and again, I'm not 100% sure of that part. I've heard that a little bit, but regardless, a $16 million buyout, if you're Louisville and you're AD Josh Hurd, who was kind of forced to hire Kenny Payne. Like he was the interim. You got to remember, he was the interim at Louisville at the time.
Who forced him?
All the players, you know, all the former players, the board. There was a lot of pressure on him to hire Kenny Payne, and he wanted.
Who else were they looking at?
I don't remember who it was then that we were talking about, but again, it wasn't even really much of a question at that point because it was like one of our own.
Bring him home, like, right.
Remember, that at that point, Juwan Howard was still hot. At that point, like, it was the in thing to do to hire the alums. Now, I will tell you, I'm going to put out at some point here soon a list of the top 20 worst hires of this century. Wow. Four of them are former NBA guys that are alums. Okay, four of them. It does not. I don't want to say it does not work, but it rarely works. Rarely works with these former NBA guys. And Kenny Payne was different because Kenny Payne at least had been in the college game for so long.
Right.
But again, I'll say this, like right when that hire was made, I was just like, Kenny Payne should be a low major head coach. That's what his first job should have been. This job was too big for him in his first job. Anyway, Mick Cronin to Louisville. If you're the AD, are you on board? Are you going to pay that type of money, $16 million, to go get Mick Cronin? Or are you going to pay, I would pay $10 million a year and try to get Scott Drew, and I don't think he takes it, but I'm going to make him have to say no to a deal and see if Baylor is competitive. Because if Baylor doesn't move up enough, maybe Scott Drew takes it.
What is Scott's buyout situation?
I don't think his buyout is that high. I think it's more people saying, like, is he really going to ever leave Baylor?
I feel like he really likes Waco, right? And he's got a new stadium. I don't know why he would leave to take on that Met. I mean, Louisville is a disaster currently. Well,
yeah, it is. But the upside is still, if you win there, you fill up that arena, which is an NBA level arena. Like, you have a major home court advantage, which he's never really had in Waco. Let's be honest. You know, they built a 7,500 person's arena.
And the Yum Center, when it's good, is really good. So that's fair. I don't know. He's proven he can go to the and win the whole thing at Baylor. I don't know why you'd leave that. You know, you can have a legacy type career down there. You already do. Why leave?
I'm sure
whoever his agent is can take that offer and be like, all right, we've got to at least get this competitive. I mean, he'll thank Louisville for coming to him because that'll probably get him a raise. But the buyout, that's a lot. They're already paying, you know, coaches. Are they still paying Chris Mack? Are they paying a football coach too?
I don't know if they paid him in already paid him out or they're still paying him, but I can't remember the deal. But they paid a lot to let him walk. They're going to pay Kenny Payne a lot to let him walk.
Right.
And then they just hired
Jeff Brohm to coach their football team. So I think they're paying a football coach too.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, listen, at some point, yeah, you've got to probably figure out, is there a better guy? And again, like a Dusty May. And Dusty May, the problem, FAU struggling right now, and at the first sign, he could just go to Indiana if you hire him. So
that's true.
You know, I don't know who the right guy is for Louisville right now. You know, could you hire Chris Beard? You know, with
man, it's just so crazy to hear that. But it's yeah, he's I mean, he'd be available.
It's a reality. All right.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/BlueWire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
As you guys know by now, we've partnered with BetMGM Sportsbook for this college basketball season. We're going to be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks and predictions throughout the college basketball season. And we are going to have special offers for you, the listeners, and the viewers on the Field of 68 each and every week during the season. If you haven't signed up with BetMGM yet, use the bonus code FIELD1500 and you will get up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager on BetMGM Sportsbook. Here's what you got to do. Download the BetMGM app. Sign up using the bonus code FIELD1500. Deposit at least $10 and place your first wager on any game. You will receive up to $1,500 in bonus bets if that bet loses. Just make sure you use the bonus code FIELD1500 when you sign up. And remember, BetMGM is now available under one wallet in select states. As a New Jersey resident, this is super convenient for me when I have to go cover games in New York or Philly. When cross the state borders, just log into your existing account instead of having to create new accounts in each state that you go to. And most importantly, I got to let you know, we do have some fun stuff coming up for this college basketball season. Bet insurance tokens, college hoops odds boosts, my personal favorite, parlay odds boosts. So download the BetMGM app today.
Another coach making baffling decisions is none other than Michigan head coach Juwan Howard, whose team is also, they're both 6-9, by the way. Both of them are 6-9. Michigan stinks. They weren't very good last year with, again, we've talked about this, Hunter Dickinson and two first-round picks. They stink this year. Juwan missed the beginning of the year with after a heart procedure, came back, sat in the assistant seat for a while, eventually took over. There was an altercation, verbal altercation with the strength coach, John Sanderson, that really didn't result in any sort of punishment for either. Juwan's back now. They're still losing. They've lost Now, I believe
four straight. They lost four in a row.
I mean, they've been terrible. They've been absolutely terrible. And yesterday, they're going to play Penn State at the Palestra. And Juwan decides, I'm going to do a really nice thing for Phil Martelli, who has taken over for him earlier this year when he was out recovering. And I'm going to let Phil Martelli coach back in at the Palestra. All right. Give me your thought. I can't wait to hear your thoughts on this.
You can't do it. You cannot. I've never seen a head coach just be like, I'm not the head coach today. And I know it's been a weird year because he had this heart procedure and Phil Martelli had to take over. And, you know, I'm glad that Juwan Howard is healthy enough to be back. But you can't just cede the position on, even if it's a nice gesture. You know, like Phil Martelli is a legend in Philly. A legend.
Yeah.
But Phil Martelli's job is to be an assistant coach. Juwan Howard's job is to be the head coach. And now that he is physically back to being able to be the head coach, play a tribute video for Phil Martelli.
That's right.
Do every time out, you could honor Phil Martelli. Like there's a lot of other things that you could do. We see it in the NBA all the time. You know, player comes back, tribute video. They could have played 30 tribute videos for Phil Martelli, but you can't make him the head coach. You know, you just, the optics are bad. You've lost four in a row. You've lost 8 of 10. You lost to McNeese. You've had all of this other stuff happen. There is so much swirling around your fan base. And then you lose the game, you know, and that's not, would it probably have been the same if Juwan coached versus Phil Martelli? Yeah, probably. I mean, who knows what would be different? I saw Juwan Howard still had the whiteboard at some point. So it's not like he was totally uninvolved with the game. But it's just, it looks so bad, especially when you lose.
Yeah.
And I'm sure their fans are like, well, why are we having him be the head coach if he's just giving the job away for a game? It just doesn't make any sense. This program is, I mean, this is shocking to see the way that they've fallen. And they're bad. Like, they are bad. Their defense is awful. I watched Penn State the other night score 60 points or 55 points and look awful doing it in East Lansing. Awful doing it. And I think they scored 79, you know, like their defense is bad. They turned it over like against the press as if the basketball was on fire. Like that's how they handled the ball. It was so, so bad. And I just, you know, their team is actually, their talent is not awful.
Nope.
Their bench is not great, but when you look
at the Big Ten this year, they should be like in the middle.
No, and the Big Ten is down, but you have Doug McDaniel, who is a good point guard. I know his numbers have taken a hit here recently. Kamwa can play.
Yeah.
You have Burnett. You have Terrace Reed. And Terrence Williams has had, like, the best year of his career. I mean, he's actually played well.
Those five are, talent-wise, certainly in the middle of that league at the worst case.
Yeah, and then – but now you look at the bench, and Trey Jackson and Will Cheddar, that's probably – you know, that's really the only guys that they're playing with Jace Howard having, you know, not that he's a great player, but he plays his role and he plays hard. They should be better than 6-9. I mean, I feel like I see a Greg Waddell video every day that's just and they're really funny, but he's distraught. And I'm sure that's how a lot of the Michigan fans feel.
So here's how the conversation probably went, right? Juwan went to, you know, first, he went to Martelli, and Martelli was like, yeah, sure, why not? This would be cool.
He's like, I've coached most of the games anyway.
Right. I'm sure. And by the way, he's coached at the Palestra enough. Like, he really didn't need another one here. Who cares? He's been there enough. And then he went to, you know, Juwan goes to Ward Manuel.
I'm surprised that Ward Manuel wasn't like, no.
But, Rob, here's what Ward Manuel said. Basically, who gives a shit? I don't care. I have bigger things to worry about right now. I have to worry about the football and that. Go ahead and do whatever the hell you want to do.
Wait, you know this? You know
that? Get out of my face. Like,
or you
get out of my office.
Hold on. You know he said this?
No,
or you're assuming? You're assuming. Okay.
I'm assuming it went like that. Juwan went in and talked to Ward Manuel, and Ward was like, I don't have time for this shit.
That's wrong on Ward Manuel then. I know that you've got the national championship. How much more effort is it to say no? You're the head coach. Coach the team.
You're going to coach. I pay you a lot of money.
Yeah.
I pay you a lot of money. This program right now is in shambles.
Well, and if he pushes back, say, we have had enough heat on this program as it is. You are one of our most famous basketball alum we've ever had. Yeah. We want this to work. This is not a good look if you don't coach the game. That is what an AD would do that is locked in and not that he doesn't care. I know football's going on. I know for the University of Michigan, that is where 99.9% of their focus and their fan base is looking at. But when football ends, those people will come over to watch the basketball team and they'll be like, what is happening? I read this story 2 weeks ago. Why did Juwan not coach the game? You know, that is bizarre to me. And that's Juwan should have known better. I feel like, and if he didn't, then Ward Manuel should know better. This basketball program has gone from one that is one of the best in the country to this year. It's kind of been a laughingstock, which is shocking to say.
I talked to one former player and a lot of the former players now, you know, there's obviously a segment, the Jalen Roses and that group that's still behind you on, but there's a lot of them.
Like I get that. Like it's,
there's a lot of them that have felt like Juwan has not really endeared himself to all the alums. I just wonder if he doesn't really care much anymore, Rob. And I kind of said this earlier, like I felt like when both sons were gone, now, this is when he was winning. He would run out of there to try to get back to the NBA as a head coach. Obviously, he can't be a head coach in the NBA. I mean, I guess somebody could hire him, but, man, it would be.
Think about this. He was, like, in the mix for the Lakers job before
hey, LeBron could still hire him tomorrow if he fires Darvin Ham. Who knows? LeBron picks – he could pick anybody. He could pick anybody at this point. All right, let's move on. We got a couple more cool, well, interesting things to talk about. Cool. This is not cool. We're going to talk about flagrant fouls, and especially in particular, there were a few over the weekend.
There's been a couple the last like 6 days that have been either game changing or near game changing or just baffling. Is what
the
I would.
The Kansas one completely altered. Like TCU won that game without that flagrant foul.
Yeah, which again, they've got the ball. They're up two. Is that right? Up two.
Yeah.
And they're in transition.
Yes. Hunter had taken an elbow from former Kansas player Ernest Uday. He had taken an elbow to the face, went down, honestly, went down like he was hit by Mike Tyson.
And he did get hit. I mean,
He got whacked. Hit. He went down, and they called a flagrant one, which meant that he took the two free throws, tied the game. And then
they stopped the play. Right. And it's been debated whether like TCU had actually stopped. You know, the rule says that the refs can't stop it until you make any, I guess, movement or effort to not attack the basket. I didn't really feel like that was the case. You know, they were still.
I don't even care. Let's forget about that part of it. Let's just talk about the actual flagrant and how you would officiate this, how you would change it.
I think from watching, I've had two flagrant fouls in games that I've called in the last week and then watching the Kansas game. And I'm convinced that we need to change the rule. That's what it needs to be. The rule needs to change. Because I think the officials are looking at this and remember, they're graded on every call they make. And if they mess up, that can really hurt them for conference tournaments, NCAA tournaments, like that stuff matters for them. So I understand that. But it has become the player safety aspect. I am all for player safety. I'm not anti-player safety. But it's become where any contact to the head, flagrant.
Yeah.
Any contact, whether it's – and when I was playing, not to sound like that guy as a former player, but it was like, you know, there's some plays that are going to happen where unfortunate things – occur.
Yeah.
Like in a basketball game, it's physical. Guys are moving fast. Things happen. But now it's like the way the rule's written, any contact to the head, flagrant one. And I'm looking at Ernest Uday. Does he hit Hunter? Yes, he does. But if the referees don't call that foul, which if they call a foul, I would have that's a foul. Okay. Sure. But you don't. You miss it on the floor. Then when the refs go to review it, they see that And they're like, oh, God, he hit him in the face. But you can't re-officiate the play. The rule is it's either nothing, as you call it, on the floor, or it's a flagrant one or flagrant two. And I'm just like, did he hit him? Yeah. But you missed the call, and I don't think that that should be a flagrant foul. It's a foul. He accidentally hit him in the face.
Yes.
He accidentally hit him in the face. Then the refs need to get it right on the court. You need to call that on the floor. Once you didn't, TCU's going. The pass was awful. Ernest Dude's flailing. These big guys at times, you got dudes that have 7-foot wingspans, and a lot of big guys do not control their limbs well. If he fouled him on the floor, you've got to call it. I saw it in the Purdue game. I saw it in the Purdue game with a blockout, and this almost changed that game. And we'll stay on Kansas, and then we can get to Purdue and even the flagrant I saw at Michigan State a week ago. But I just think that the rules are written in a way that's trying to get max player safety. But some of these calls are ridiculous. I mean, that if I'm Jamie Dixon, I would have been on the floor. I would have gotten ejected. That is a shame. And it's been very polarizing. You know, you listen, I feel like half the people are on one side, half are on the other. I have come to the conclusion that the rule has to be looked at this offseason, because that's a shame that TCU lost in that manner.
Here's my take on it. Like, there's got to be some human element to be able to determine, okay, you know what? This was inadvertent, completely inadvertent. Like, I get he hit him, but to me, to give him two shots and the ball.
It's like getting the death penalty for, you know, jaywalking.
Right.
That's like, what I felt like.
You've got to be able to look at it and not go necessarily by the letter of the law. There's got to be some room for interpretation there between the three officials. Yes, he hit him. Yes, it's clearly a foul.
But then call it on the floor. That is your job. Call it on the floor if that happens. Because then when you go to the replay, and I'm sure those guys are looking at
that. Even when you go to the replay, Rob, even if you go to the replay there and you look at it, you say to yourself, hey, listen, yeah, it was a foul. Yeah, we're going to give, you know, maybe you give Hunter the free throws, but I'm not giving Kansas the ball.
They can't.
They're
very against, and this is my interpretation of a couple conversations, they are against re-officiating plays off of video. They want the refs to, it's only if it's upgraded to a flagrant, if they miss some flagrant act, or they maybe called a foul and then they see, oh, well, this happened because this flagrant act had occurred. And that's a new rule. And I think in a way, there's some things that's good about that.
Sure.
But now we're seeing the downside of that as well.
Yeah. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to have as many top-tier candidates as possible to interview. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. I've used LinkedIn Jobs multiple times before, thankfully not to hire Hummel, but I've done it to hire plenty of other people, and it's been unbelievable. Effective, quick, everything has been awesome about it. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than 1 billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. Hiring is easy when you have that many quality candidates. So easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. LinkedIn knows that small businesses are wearing so many hats and might not have the time or resources to hire. Thankfully, with LinkedIn, the process is intuitive, quick, and easy. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. So post your job for free at linkedin.com/good. That's linkedin.com/good to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, it's very frustrating, especially at a game like that, where, again, we know how hard it is to win.
Well, at TCU, their non-conference was not good. They need those types of wins to make the NCAA tournament. And they have a talented, super athletic team.
You watch that loss. My guess is they'll be like 8 off the bubble.
And they'll need that.
Puts them in. Literally, that loss at the end of the year, remind me, because I've always wanted to do this, like 3 or 5 teams where one play or 3 plays over the course of the year would change their season from being an NIT team to an NCAA. That play is going to change their season.
It totally could.
Yep.
The Purdue play with the flagrant one, Lance Jones is blocking out Quincy Gary. Lance Jones is 6 foot tall. Quincy Gary is 6 foot eight. Probably outweighs him by 25 or 30 pounds. The shot goes up. And as soon as it does, Lance Jones does as any player is instructed to do. He goes and blocks out. Think about a 6 foot player blocking a 6 foot eight player. You are fighting for your life. All of your effort is going backwards into the player you're blocking out. Quincy Guerrier, as the shot has now hit the rim, leaves his feet and jumps up into the air.
Okay.
Lance Jones still blocking out because what does every coach in the world tell their player to do? Keep this guy from getting the rebound. And the way that I see it from a former player's standpoint, when Guerrier jumps, what is Lance Jones' momentum going to do as he is putting all of his force backwards?
Yeah, well,
he's going to hit him. He's going to go backwards.
He's going to undercut.
Right? Now undercuts Quincy Guerrier.
Yeah.
So they go to look at it because the ball gets knocked out of bounds. And they, again, no foul is called on the floor. So you can't just call a foul for undercutting. And they upgraded to a flagrant one.
Wow.
And this goes from like, all right, the game is probably over, to all of a sudden two shots and the ball. And if Coleman Hawkins doesn't travel, it would be literally a game. I mean, that could have changed the entire game. But I'm just like, I think the rule is flawed. I really do.
Yeah, I do
because
too.
I think these refs are trying to do what
it's
they
gotta
think.
It's got to be looked at. It's got to be looked at in the offseason.
And then the last one I'll talk about, I'm at Michigan State for the Penn State game. And you've got Xavier Booker, who Nick Kern is in transition, going for a layup. Booker's trying to block his shot, swipes at it, hits Kern in the head with his forearm.
Yeah.
Basketball play, clearly. Flagrant one. I'm like,
what are we doing here?
What are we doing?
What are we doing?
I mean, it has gotten so out of control. I still disagree with the way that and I've had it explained to me a couple times. I don't agree with the Purdue one. I thought the Michigan State call was awful. I think the TCU play is a tragedy for TCU. But I just think the rule has to be looked at. Because I do believe that the refs are trying to interpret the rule
the way they're asked.
The way that they're being asked to do so. Right. But I think that
it's not on them, Rob, because like you said at the outset of this, they're doing their job in order, when they're evaluated, to be able to be in the mix for conference tournament and NCAA tournament and a Final Four. So that if they don't do it the way they're told, you can miss out.
You can miss out on games that they want to officiate. But I just think that we're trying to take out all dangerous plays from the game. That is a good initiative.
It's like the NFL.
However,
this is a
physical sport. Like, I don't think that you're almost over-officiating it to make the game where it's like, what is happening? Like, what are we doing? I was sick for TCU, and I thought the other calls were baffling. So
let's finish up with two teams that we both saw for about a few minutes apiece here. Illinois. I want to ask you, we've talked enough about Purdue, but Illinois did go into West Lafayette, and you know they were in the mix.
Well, a lot of teams would have gotten blitzed like that and been like,
without Shannon, I have written them off to win the Big Ten regular season title, and people thought I was crazy. Illinois fans are crazy, but like to me, they have no chance of winning the Big Ten.
I don't think anyone does. I mean, I think Purdue is
correct.
They won it by three games last year. They're better, and the league is worse.
Unless the big boy gets hurt. And knock on wood.
Yeah, I mean, injury would be the one thing that could change that.
That's it. Brayden Smith or Zach Edey. Like, those, if either of them get hurt.
If they have their entire personnel, their entire complement of players, I don't think they're going
to
lose.
Here's my question to you. After seeing Illinois now, are they a team that could make a second weekend NCAA tournament? Are they a team that could finish in the top three of the Big Ten this year? Or are they a team that's going to fall off now as time goes on and they feel the effects of not having Terrence Shannon Jr., which, you know, again, most likely.
I'm still the jury's out on the second weekend.
Yeah.
I think they're still an NCAA tournament team, and I think that they could finish in the top four or five. in the Big
Ten. Is that more an indictment on how weak the Big Ten is?
That's part of it. But I do think that you look at their roster, and I still like their talent. I don't think that they have the top end of Terrence Shannon, who takes them to like Final Four type team. But, you know, the ball has really moved. Damask is a player. I saw Gary three times last year, and I just think his mentality at Illinois is totally different. I mean, he's a good player.
Yep.
Coleman Hawkins is a tough matchup for a lot of teams. The Ty Rogers point guard experience.
It worries me.
It had not hurt them until now. Purdue guarded them in a way that they had not seen. They just put Edie on Rogers and basically didn't guard him.
Yeah.
And the copycat effect, that's going to happen every game going forward until
You're going to run to him every game.
I feel like it's even more than that. Edie was at the charge arc. You know, Rondo's like a short closeout to like 6 feet.
Right.
This is like 18 feet. Like, he was basically.
And then it's going to get in Ty Rogers' head. It's going to get in his head.
Agreed. That's concerning. You know, they have Nico Moretti, who's coming back from a foot, but, you know, not having played, never really having been in the mix. I don't know how that is going to look. I like Luke Goody. I mean, I like their team.
Me
and with
too.
Shannon, I really like their team.
Correct.
I don't know about second weekend, but they can definitely finish in the top four or five. Right now, I still think that it's like Purdue, I would say Wisconsin, Illinois, and then who knows? I mean, I was thinking Michigan State, but God, they were terrible last night.
I think the third spot is going to just keep flipping. I think there's a lot of, like, again, it depends on, you know, these stretches of who's at home for stretches, who's healthy. I don't think there's much disparity between.
No, I agree. And the ball has moved for them. You know, they've got this, the ISO that Brad was so upset about last year for Penn State, but now his players are capable of doing it. He's like, I kind of like this offense. And then defensively they guard and they play hard. So they force you into a lot of tough twos, and they're as good as just about anybody in the country from a 2-point defense standpoint, like top 20.
Yep.
So yeah, they can finish in the top three or four of the Big Ten. Second weekend, maybe.
I'm with you.
Jury's still out. I don't know.
I'm right there with you on both. Like, I don't think they're a second weekend team. I think only because the Big Ten doesn't have a lot of strength above with Purdue, somebody's going to have to finish third. I don't know who the hell it's going to be. I think we're both in agreement. Wisconsin's clearly the number two team right now, and one of the bigger surprises around the country this year, because I don't think anybody saw that coming. Like, clearly
Wisconsin's depth is so much better. I mean, Connor Assijian, like, doesn't – I know he had a back injury early, but he had 12 points, but he still only played 12 minutes. John Blackwell has helped them immensely, and A.J. Storr has helped them immensely, along with that core, Prowl, and Hepburn and Tyler Wall.
All right, so I saw Carolina. I went down to Clemson Saturday morning, and first trip to Little John. And Carolina won kind of a dogfight, like a tough defensive-minded game. Clemson couldn't make a shot from three. They were 1-for-18. P.J. Hall, Baycott did a really good job on P.J. Hall. Really good job. And I like this Carolina team again. Like, I enjoy watching them again. And I don't want
to – R.J. Davis has been awesome.
Yes, R.J. wasn't great in this game. And that's the beauty of this team right now. Okay, so – number one, they're guarding and rebounding. Number two, and I asked Baycott and RJ and Harrison Ingram, all these guys, this. I said, like, do you think a lot of it is all of you guys before the season, we were like, all right, yeah, great. You added Harrison Ingram. He lost last year. Cormac Ryan, he lost last year. Jalen Withers, he lost last year. Oh, by the way, Baycott and RJ, you lost last year. Like, I just don't think we had a lot of confidence necessarily. But – and Ingram was the one who really said to me, yeah, like, you know, listen, we're in this to win. We you know, Ingram was the top 50, 25.
No, I know. He was a big-time player coming out of high school.
So I think there's something to be said for that, Rob, where you get older, you mature, you understand, like, all right, it's not all about me anymore, because nobody's given a shit about me last year, even though I put up decent numbers, because we didn't win.
Yeah, that's very valid. The turnaround is pretty amazing, because last year it was so disappointing on so many different levels, and the chemistry obviously was not right, and it's clear that kind of the Caleb Love split has been best for all parties. It's been good for him out in Arizona. It's been good for Carolina. Their team is playing great.
You know what it is, too, Rob?
You know what? Also, I'd say for as much crap as Hubert Davis took last year, he deserves some credit for, all right, you know, what a roller coaster of his first couple of years. I mean, national championship game and then last year's debacle, and now he's got him back. And you're right. The defensive effort to have them in the top 20 defensive efficiency after the defense was porous last year. That's
huge.
That's pretty impressive by him.
Yeah, the ball moves. And at the end of the games, Baycott gave me this stat before the year. They were like, I don't know, they were like 3-8 in close games last year. They couldn't close them out. And again, part of that is Caleb Love. Let's face it. Part of it is Caleb Love because, again, he can win.
Well, his shot selection, too, at times last year.
Exactly. Like now they move the ball. They've got a bunch of guys that are capable. It's not like RJ's taking a ton of crazy shots and they're relying on him to have to make a play in close games. They can move the ball. Ingram's a tough matchup. Baycott looks quicker and healthier than he did a year ago, coming off the ankle injury, remember, in the title game.
Yeah.
Cormac Ryan, he made some shots the other day, which he really hasn't made. And like Cadeau's not much of a shooter, but like he can push the ball so they can get some points in transition that they weren't getting last year. Like I don't know if this is like a Final Four team again, but like they are fun to watch.
No, and they're clearly playing winning basketball to last year.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's been fun. All right. Well, listen, I got to go because I got to keep looking for this Hummel extra large. I don't think it exists. So I'm.
Hey, nice apparel from you on the podcast today. Indiana with the nice win, and then FAU. What are they doing?
Well, we may talk about them next week because I like the boys from Boca, and I do. I enjoy watching them for the most part. I have not enjoyed watching them.
Their highs and lows have been very wide. We've got some high highs and some low lows.
Their starts have been terrible lately, and it's almost like they think they can just flip the switch. And when do they understand that they're not? They're not that good. They're not that good that they can sleepwalk through a first half.
Even if you are that good, that's a dangerous game to play.
Sure is. All right. Get back to work. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Goodman and Hummel Pod. And we'll see you next week. Goodman and Hummel Podcast. And we got Robbie Hummel.
I'd known you since you were a kid.
I could blow my knee out, both knees, and still kick your ass.
We're trying to find the Robbie Hummel statue.
I wanted to kill you.